This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeline Bourne.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, leches, perverts, and peeping toms. Attitudes to sex and depravity in speculative fiction.
I'm giggling like a schoolchild.
I am on the inside. I'm sure I will be. In fact, fair warning to anyone listening, my language is probably going to be appalling this week. So if that offends you, tune in next week instead.
You may want to give this one a miss. This was actually an episode I was thinking about doing for a while. And it was because I was talking to someone recently about anime, and I was thinking about sort of the anime that I liked and a lot of the anime that I don't, and why there were certain anime that I didn't like, despite the fact there being lots of things that I usually would enjoy in it.
Yeah.
And I pinpointed it to a particular archetype that kind of annoys me, and it's the lecher.
Yeah.
Now, I should add, there's a difference between the lecher and the sort of the womanizer.
Yeah.
In that you have a character like from Full Metal Alchemist, you have Roy Mustang, who's a womanizer. He seems to be going on a lot of dates and stuff like that. But in this case, this is reciprocated. He's charming these women, he's going on dates with them, they're all enjoying it. Then you have the lecher character, who's the character who goes sort of looking, is, you know, a peeping Tom, is a little bit rapey sometimes. And I think the thing that annoys me is that you get this character who is pretty disgusting and who does these things like peeping, like casual groping, you know, of the female companions.
Yeah, and it's sort of the frottageurs, the ones who brush up against you in elevators and stairwells, and it's an accident, except it's not.
Yeah, and it's just this that they might get a smack at the time, but it's never behaviour that's really punished or addressed.
No, I think that's fair, and not to take away from your point, because you are absolutely right about the whole it being brought up in anime, and sometimes I think that's, you know, the artist's way and the writer's way of trying to address these issues as well. But
yeah,
something that a friend of mine said that's always stuck in my mind is, you can trust Japan, good old Japan, the dirty old uncle of the rest of the world. And in a way, he's right. And he's coming from the position of seeing a lot of this sort of anime as well. And I know you've seen a lot more than I have. And I think in a lot of ways, perhaps the attitudes towards sex and talking about sex is probably a bit more open and probably better in a lot of respects in Japan, but this sort of thing creeping in is slightly disturbing and makes you go a bit ugh.
Well, see, the thing is that I agree with you, but I also disagree, because I feel like, not going too much into Japanese culture and things along those lines, it's a very male orientated thing, and there's always a very simple reaction. You have the character who is the sort of the groping character or sort of, yeah, the pervy character, and you have the women who go no and run off, you know, and that's it. And then if you have women who sort of reciprocate, they are seen as they are the slutty characters. For instance, again going back to Full Metal Alchemist, you have the literal character of Lust,
yeah,
who is openly sexual. But actually, the reason I like Full Metal Alchemist so much is it was written by a female author, and despite having Lust as an actual character, and she seduces several people, and despite having Roy Mustang, who is that, you know, eligible bachelor kind of guy who's the charmer and stuff like that, you don't have the pervy mentor. And there are consequences to actions. There's consequences to the people who this woman, who Lust seduces. You know, there's consequences for everything that happens. And I guess it was because I was watching a little bit of, I saw a clip of, oh God, what was it called? Dragon Ball Z, right?
Yeah.
And you have Bulma, whose actual name is Bloomers.
Well, so, as in the undergarment.
As in the undergarment. And all the people in her family all have the name of underwear. her mother and her father and her. And you have, I think it's Master Roshi, who's just really, really perverted the entire time. And it's played off as humour. It's funny that he's perverted. It's funny that he gets a smack and sort of a red face and stuff like that. But it never goes beyond that. It's just written off as comedy. And I find that deeply disturbing. Because as far as I'm concerned, you're basically saying that this is not behaviour that he needs to address. He never needs to change himself. He's never really made to pay for what he does. He gets slapped a couple of times and things like that. But it's not like he ever rethinks. And it's not like the woman's feelings are ever considered. She's sort of seen as closed off, and it's just meant to be funny. And for me, it feels like that really puts humour on sexual harassment. And sexual harassment isn't funny.
No, and you're right. And it plays into that sort of carry-on film mentality, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's a little bit worse.
I don't know, how many carry-on films have you seen? Because they're really bad.
Okay, yeah, right. It just feels quite... It feels very dated, I think. And I think that you're still seeing quite a lot of it. And I don't really like that. And I really wish that it was something that was addressed more.
Yeah.
And not relied on as humour.
No, I think you're right. And so really what we're doing with this episode is looking at why leches and perverts and peeping toms are put into fiction, both film, TV series, whatever, and what that kind of says about the author mindset. And we might branch out a little bit into sort of some of the weird sex we see in fiction and, you know, why is that in there? Is that kind of an author kink thing? Or is this saying something about society itself? So if we start off with, probably most people are familiar with this, but it's the story of Lady Godiva or Lady Godgifa, who in around 1043, we're not absolutely sure because the dates weren't kept meticulously, she was married to Jarl Leofric of Coventry, and he had very heavy penalties of taxes on his people, and to relieve these taxes, you know, she interceded with her husband, and he said, okay, well, get up on your horse naked, ride through the streets, and then I'll consider it. Now, I'm presuming Leofric actually said this quite sarcastically and wasn't expecting her to do it, but she bound him to a promise and said, well, if I do this, then I want your absolute, you know, sworn oath to God that you will sign the charter and seal that you'll relieve the taxes.
Yeah.
Anyway. Everyone who's familiar with the story knows that she lets down her long hair, which covers her to her knees, which, you know, perhaps actually wouldn't have been that unusual for Saxon times because your hair was your crowning glory.
Yeah.
Rode through the town naked on a white mare. The white mare might be an affectation, to be honest. And, the taxes were relieved, the charter was signed and sealed, etc. It's worth noticing at this point that long hair is a symbol of chastity and has been all the way up through the medieval era, well into the Renaissance and beyond.
Yeah.
So the fact that she let down long hair suggested that God was protecting her virtue by giving her something to cover herself with. But the peeping Tom part of it was all the people in the town had agreed not to look at her when she did her naked ride.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy sort of went, yeah, but I'd quite like the eyeful of that. So he peered out through the shutters, and then God apparently struck him blind. And then sometime in the 1700s, people started referring to him as Peeping Tom.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from. Anybody who has a look at someone naked who shouldn't, you know, without their knowledge, really.
Yeah. And I think sort of we do it between partners, usually. I say, sorry, usually sounds a bit weird, but as in like, I think that a lot of, you know, partners, you'll have definitely sort of, if you are in a relationship, you'll probably have spotted your partner naked when they're not aware that you're there.
Do you know, you can't avoid it in my house. I'm not being funny, but it's like, okay, I won't go into detail, but, you know, getting them to walk around with something more on is quite difficult. You've kind of got to be inured to it rather than sort of like, hide my blushing eyes, kind of. But ultimately, it's a consensual thing, so it's not really, you know, it's not really an issue.
Yeah, no, the point of the Peeping Tom is that it is non-consensual. Interestingly enough, then, and again, this is a case where this was not used for comedic effect. his lechery was seen as sinful and wrong, and he was punished for it. And interestingly enough, when we consider lechery and how it's punished in traditional, you know, Christian, Judaic religions, it is usually women who are punished for lechery. And yes. Women and men, sort of, depending what class they are, they kind of get away with it. But in this case, this was a woman who, through virtue, was stripping naked, and who was doing it. I mean, she didn't agree to do it because she knew everyone was going to cover their eyes. She was going to do it anyway. So this was a woman who was willing to be seen. And everyone in their sort of their, you know, appreciation said, "We won't look." So the thing that protected her was her sincerity.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, ultimately, we don't know how true that story is. Certainly there's evidence she was a historical person. Whether she rode naked, she might have done. But the thing was, nudity wasn't such a big taboo.
Yeah.
So that would have been a bit unusual in a way. I mean, okay, you wouldn't have wanted your countess to wander through the streets naked, even on a horse. That would have been a bit... But even so, it wasn't quite the same as, say, if you go a couple of centuries later, how the Christian church viewed female nudity.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting as a little piece of historic folklore, put it that way. And it obviously gives us the interesting Peeping Tom type character.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to leches in fiction, you are absolutely right. And it does show up in the anime in particular. But I think it also shows up in other books and things as well.
I agree.
But if you watch a lot of anime, that must be really noticeable.
It is, and I think it's possibly because we have archetypes in Western fiction. And there are archetypes in anime as well, where you have a master character who is also a bit of a pervert. Another example is Naruto. Kakashi isn't quite the same, because Kakashi, despite the fact that he reads pervy books, he's not a peeping Tom. But Jiraiya, Ero Sennin, is he's literally called Ero Sennin, as in Ero, you know. And he's constantly trying to get Naruto to help him peep into women's baths and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's something you see in a lot. You get these very, very pervy mental characters. And sometimes they aren't male. Though, typically what happens is that it's a male and they're old. So it's an old male pervy mentor. Or sometimes there's a pervy female character, but she's never old. She's young and beautiful and has humongous breasts.
Sort of a mid-20s Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah, basically. Or, you know, it might be that actually she's old, but she doesn't look old. You know what I mean? She's like, you know, everyone's just, they're like, "Oh, wow, what are you, like, 20? And she's there like, "I'm actually, like, 50 years old." But she doesn't look it, you know?
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Carry On films. It was something that did appear in Western culture as well. But I don't feel like we see it in the same way now. It's not used for comedic effect.
Not in the same way now, no. But
and obviously... not in children's fiction.
No, certainly not. Well, not now. I think the thing is, obviously, I'm coming from the perspective of having 13 more years of this. So I remember the 80s. Oh, God, here we go. I remember the 80s. And in the 80s, you know, men were men and women were grateful. And
Jesus.
Sorry. How many more cliches can I come up with in the next 5 minutes? I don't know. But I do remember... You wouldn't have thought anything of laughing at the Carry On films. And it was a case of, well, the silly blonde girl with the pneumatic chest. At some point, her bra would have popped off. The fact that no bra in the history of bras has ever, like, exploded off a female form when she was doing exercise is neither here nor there. Thank you, Carry On Camping. And it's only later on, when you have a bit more distance to look at these things that you grew up with, that you think, that's really awful. Why is that funny?
Yeah.
This is not a case of she's given permission for anything like this.
Yeah. Though again, it would be an accident, so her bra would pop off. It wouldn't be that there'd be a group of guys sneaking up trying to snip it off.
Well, there's a couple of things there where, in some films, actually, yes, there are.
Okay.
In the accident scenario, even when it is an accident, there is always a few blokes there who are, like, craning their necks for a better angle right before it happens. And I suppose the third thing is that isn't that really representative of male gaze in terms of, you know, the camera and how women are viewed in general through film, certainly in that particular era?
Yeah.
And I bet it was a case of people weren't even aware of it. It was so endemic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. And again, there's a thing you get in anime, which is the weird camera shots. The totally obscene camera shots, where it's just they're like, for some reason, the camera's looking up past one of the female characters' backside.
I have to say, there's some scenes in anime where I'm there for a moment, and for some reason it lingers, and I'm like twisting my head, trying to work out what the hell I'm looking at, because anatomically it's really improbable. And then you work it out, it's like, oh, why are you showing us that?
Like, I really don't need to see those panties. Why are their breasts shaking so much? And sorry to be crass, but it's not like they focus on guys' bulge moving around and stuff like that. Why is it when they're running, we don't see that? Don't see things jumping up and down in their tight trousers? Like, seriously.
God. Maybe there's nothing to really jump around.
The other way is lechery in comic books.
Yeah.
And I think in particular it's lechery on the part of male comic book writers and how they portray the female figure. How these female superheroes are designed, how they're placed on the covers. And here's one thing which is really odd. Have you noticed there are some editions of stuff where all the female superheroes, if they're naked and stuff like that, they walk around on tiptoes?
Yes.
And it's like, men have no idea how to draw women wearing anything other than high heels.
No, that's a fair point.
That even when they're not wearing shoes, they're still on tiptoes. Like, that's not how women walk around.
I've got to say, I look at them and I think, you know, just in heels, and I'm just like, you wouldn't fight in that. You just...
It's so impractical.
You wouldn't fight in a short skirt. You might fight in a short skirt, but you wouldn't fight in heels.
I mean, yeah, you might fight in one of those, you know, if they're wearing a kind of a leotard thing, you might fight in that. But, like, the thing is that so could the men. They don't wear them. They wear full body suits. So why don't the women?
Yeah, well, we're on to the female armour question then, aren't we?
Yeah, female armour. Totally impractical. Designed entirely for the shape and not for protection in any form or another. Like, we've discussed the shape of armour. If you have breastplates in armour, where there's literally a dip in between the two breasts, that is not only lacking in protection, it's more dangerous. You're more likely to be killed. Because all it would take would be one hard hit to the chest area. That dip plunges into your sternum and kills you.
I mean, you certainly wouldn't joust in something like that, would you?
No, you wouldn't. But you wouldn't get into a fight with someone who has super strength. You wouldn't get into a fight of anyone who's carrying anything who might throw at you, where you might fall, anything like that. Because having two pointed things up, it's like literally having something sharp pointed at you and running around. It's ridiculous. But do they care? No, they don't. And you're like, well, you know, people say, oh, it's just a comic. Why can't you let it be? And I'm like, okay, fine. But I want to see Bruce Wayne's bulging cock then. Yeah, I said it. Isn't Hawkeye wearing a leotard? Give me the closest they come is with Dick Grayson, whose ass is almost constantly talked about.
See, like, I thought that was a myth until I actually saw a few of those, and I'm like, oh my god, no, Robin gets sexualized, particularly when he's a boy.
Yeah, he does when he's a boy, and then there's just this one bit where it's Dick Grayson, and Batman just goes, recognizing him, he's like, I'd know that ass anywhere, and I'm like, for God's sake! Like,
I can't believe that was canon. I was like, okay then.
You're literally his father, stop it!
Yeah, that was pretty yeah.
So yeah, and then one might say, why? Yeah, the Flash wears skin tight stuff. We don't see anything. Why aren't they wearing what are they called? The things that people wear in cricket, that guys wear in cricket.
You mean a box?
Yeah, around their private areas. Why don't they have one of those? Why don't we see a bulge there? We don't, do we?
Presumably because they're not sexy at all, and they hold everything in. They don't really create a bulge. The whole point is they sort of push everything into the body.
Oh my god!
Sorry, I'm gonna explain how I know this. I know this because when I left my main karate club and went off on adventures of my own. There was a bit of a going away shindig with the rest of the club, and in front of the entire club, my sensei presented me with a really moving little sort of crystal tribute saying, basically in Japanese, you'll always be a yudansha in a club, etc, etc. And then the second present was a box for my first student, because I had unfortunately earned the nickname Naka Cracker. And he felt sure my first student would be A, male, and B, really, really need that sort of protection from me. So, this is how I know how they work. all that aside, they just wouldn't be really all that attractive, I suppose, in the same way. And I don't know. The market for comics is changing, though, isn't it? Because it used to be almost predominantly male buyers.
Yeah, but sorry, I'm just going back, because you're saying it wouldn't be attractive. But that's because you're thinking of something which actually has function.
Good point.
So they could have these big metal cocks. They want to. Well, they could! Like, you see jock straps and stuff like that, like the medieval ones. They had these huge cock pieces.
Not in my dojo, they couldn't.
not in your dojo, but I'm talking about sort of like in armour and stuff like that. They used to have these huge, you know.
To be fair, if you've seen Henry VIII's jousting armour, he has this massive, massive erect cod piece, and you're kind of like, where does that go on the horse, kind of thing?
Exactly. No, so why aren't the male superheroes wearing cod pieces? Sure, that they don't actually, you know, technically protect the cock in the same way that, or the balls or the rest of it, in the same way that the women's armour actually is more likely to kill them than it is to protect them. But hey, why not? And we know why. And it's, as you say, it was because predominantly, initially when it started out, it was a very heavily male readership. And now we're moving away from that.
Yeah, that's true. With regard to female armour, briefly, there is part in The Belgariot by David Eddings where Synedra, who is the young queen, or she will be the young queen, basically, she's like destined to marry Belgarion ultimately. When they're going to war, she ends up she never really learns to fight or anything, but she takes on the role of giving speeches and getting the men all riled up, and they make armour for her. And first of all, the armour actually makes ordinary armour just in her size.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, that's just not very, it's not going to inspire anyone's imagination. And she actually has him make basically metal bikini type armour for her.
Right.
And obviously David Eddings is well known for poking fun at the genre. And I'm pretty sure that's what he was doing there by having her say, well, I'm not actually going to be fighting in it. I just need them to think I'm going to be fighting.
Yeah. So that they can.
But I will say, and obviously when you do compete in karate, generally people aren't coming at you with a lance, usually.
No, usually.
But the chest protectors, I don't know if you've ever worn one, they're not terribly comfortable, but they are actually moulded around your breasts.
They are. I couldn't wear them. I found them actually quite dangerous.
I tried one a couple of times. It's a very, very funny story. Actually, it was me and Michelle being incredibly childish when they first arrived by running around our flat wearing them, punching each other in the chest and saying things like tits of steel. We were young, we were bored, we didn't have lectures that day.
You don't need to justify it, it's fine.
I feel like I do, looking back. Anyway, I came to the conclusion that actually it was less uncomfortable getting hit in the chest without one than with one. I mean, they don't dig in or anything, but it's still not great. And I think part of the problem is, this is why I'm a little bit wary about people wearing helmets and things for Kumite, because if you're already not doing full contact, or you're not controlling your contact, then it makes people a bit laissez-faire about their contact, and they tend to hit harder. And then you get the spread out area of damage, which can turn into things like compression rather than immediate injury, which means that the fight stops. So that's just my opinion.
No, I would tend to agree with you. Interestingly enough, and sort of going back towards sort of comic books and stuff like that, you know, you mentioned the her asking for armor and stuff like that. One of the arguments against when you have these very sort of sexy female characters, they sort of, a lot of these writers throw it back in women's faces, and they say, well, you know, I thought that feminists were supposed to support all types of women. These are sexually liberal women. These are women who are proud of their bodies. These are women who want to show themselves off. And a part of me says, yes. One thing that I am a huge advocate for is letting women express themselves in the way that they want to express themselves. But something that a lot of people don't seem to, or seem to sort of conveniently forget, is that these are not real women.
No.
They're not real women. And regardless, you know, if they were real women and they were doing that, like, yeah, absolutely. And as characters, you could say yes. But the thing is, you have to understand that the reason that they are sexually liberal, the reason that they have made these decisions, that's not decisions that they've made themselves. Those are decisions that have been made for them because they have been created. And that it's not for actually for any sexual liberal reasons, for the sake of women. It is for the male gaze. It's a perverse reason. It's nothing to do with feminism at all. And it is so that they can be sexualized, not so that they can be liberal within themselves, because they can't be liberal within themselves because they are not real characters.
You find that when the characters do have any sort of liberal sexual arc, that they tend to be punished for it as well at some point.
Exactly. And it usually involves the female characters getting raped.
Yeah, rape, pregnancy, or, you know, a really good beating, or, you know, something, depending on what sort of comics you're reading, but also something a bit demonic quite often.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. I will go back to your thing about I want to see Bruce Wayne straining cock. Obviously, I don't, but...
Neither do I. I'm really not a big Bruce Wayne fan, to be honest.
But I will say, if you check out this series called The Boys by Garth Ennis, that the male superheroes in that, and they're really male anti-superheroes, and so are the females, but they do wear unitards, and you do see quite a lot in the way of bulges. They have not pulled any punches there. These are nasty, nasty characters, but Alan said, oh, have a look at this graphic novel, and I happened to open it to a particular page. It was like, oh, okay, kind of thing. Because I wasn't expecting to see that, and I think the fact that I wasn't expecting to see that kind of says it all, really.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The thing is, you know, someone made a point, which is that they drew a male character in the pose of a female character, a superhero, wearing kind of clothes, and wearing this sort of similar kind of skimpish outfits. And you looked at it and immediately you're like, oh, wow, that's weird. Like, it felt wrong. You looked at it and it felt wrong. Even if it wasn't overtly sexual, they were wearing a minimum amount of clothes in a position which was quite sexual. And it felt weird and it felt wrong. And it looked wrong. And then you suddenly think, you're confronted with that all the time with female characters. But we're so acclimatized to it, we kind of just let it happen.
Yeah.
So that's lechery, I feel, that is quite prevalent in comic book writing and in animation and in movies, to be honest.
Well,
because you want that pose, which is that we want to see her tits, her ass, and her face. Face is less important. Tits and ass, though.
No, you're absolutely right. I was just thinking, I think there are examples of that in fiction as well, and I'm going to unfortunately invoke Terry Goodkind. But I'm not going to rant about how he doesn't finish his books this time, or that he just goes off on a tangent. Wizard's First Rule starts off as very bog standard boy gets a sword, high epic fantasy.
Okay.
Goes on a journey. Have you ever seen the Mary Whitehouse Experience where you've got that artist who's talking to someone saying, "Oh yes, sir," and the lovely hills and the blue as it goes down into the green of the valley and everything, the shadow there, and it looks black, and then he just starts raving about the colour black.
No.
You now need to go and look that up on YouTube. But trust me, the way the book shifts from the first third and the third to a half to the second, say half to two thirds, is very much like that rambling going from, "Oh yes, the lovely hills, everything's black, black, black," with Terry Goodkind. And it's nuts. And what happens is that Richard crosses the wall and he's found out that he's a wizard, as you do. Not in the Harry Potter sense at all. This is not clean stuff. And basically he gets captured by a woman completely dressed in red leather, as you do. These women were basically taken by, you know, Lord Ral as young girls and trained to be sort of sexual assassins who could capture a wizard's magic and turn it against them. And they were experts in torture and breaking men down. And the whole thing is just utterly horrific for the next several chapters. He's captured and tortured and basically turned into sort of this beast almost. And I can't do it justice in description. You'd have to read it, but you'd be reading it with your eyebrows and your hairline, trust me.
Christ.
But then again, you once again have this very sexualized female character, and they're created through abuse, through systematic abuse.
Yeah.
They specifically take very kind girls because these kind girls, once they're twisted, make the cruelest and most ruthless torturers, the Maud Sith.
Right.
And, things like she, ultimately, you're probably not going to read this book now. Anyway. Ultimately, when he escapes by granting this particular woman's request and killing her because she can't repair herself. And she's sort of fallen in love with him as well, because he's the hero.
Right, yes.
So, yeah. But it's just, I don't know, how they eventually completely break them down is force them to have sex. You know, they just torture them to the point where, you know, their body will literally respond with anything they're told to do, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because your mind will try and protect your body like that to a certain extent. You know, once you go past a point where your psyche's been really broken down. It's incredibly disturbing, obviously. But what gets me is the fact that there is a distinct parallel between the comic book female characters in superheroes and villains and these expert torturers.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't, and it's probably partly a result of when it was written and for whom it was written, but it doesn't ever feel to me that it's presented in a way that's actually distasteful. It comes across as very distasteful when you read it, but...
Mm.
Reads as though it's supposed to be a bit titillating, to be honest.
Yeah. That's a point, though. Looking at male villains and looking at female villains, and again, let's look in particular sort of, let's look at DC, just for this sake. Look at the typical DC villains. You have Scarface. Is it Scarface? Two-Face? Two-Face?
Who's he the opposite number of?
One of the Batman ones. You have Two-Face, I think. You know, you have Penguin, Joker. None of these characters are particularly good looking. Yeah, you've got Heath Ledger as Joker, but you know what I mean, is that the Joker doesn't present himself as handsome.
No.
Two-Face isn't handsome. The Penguin isn't handsome.
No, or the Scarecrow.
Or Scarecrow, yeah. Now look at the female villains. Poison Ivy. Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Can you think of an ugly female villain?
Not off the top of my head, but I mean, there probably is some, just in the
Oh,
case of just because it would have been something a bit different. But
yeah.
even that's quite telling in its way, because when
Yeah,
you have
is
a
it?
token one, then.
Yeah, is it? You can name ugly male villains, but you can't name ugly female villains. Catwoman, again. Attractive. They're all attractive. And it's this weird sort of sexual, fetishization, which is that these women kind of do tend to sort of seduce and are a little bit rapey with the male characters. But it's okay, apparently, because they're good looking. So it's almost like they kind of want it, which again is a terrible message to send out. Whereas I think that if readers of comic books saw this really ugly woman, acting in the same way with the male characters, they'd be quite disturbed.
It would be almost worse than that. It would be a case of you'd pity her. The immediate reaction would be pity that you have this person who is acting in a very sexualized way when clearly because they're not attractive, they're not designed to be sexual.
But I don't. I think we might. But I also think if you had this ugly woman who had one of the sort of superheroes tied down and she started touching them and doing stuff like that, which the others do really. They'll straddle them and kiss them and do all sorts of like. If you had an ugly character, an old ugly woman doing that to one of the male characters and being overtly sexual in that way and just taking what she wanted, taking pleasure, it would be very disturbing.
Yeah, it would be disgust, wouldn't it? It
It,
wouldn't.
exactly. And that's the thing is that really it should be discussed every time. Sexual harassment, sexual abuse should always be met with disgust. And yet, because of the way that these characters are sexualized, and because of the way that the sort of the male characters reply to it, so like I won't play any of your games, or they look away and stuff like that, but the kind of the message, the presence that's sort of sent out is actually they kind of like it, or really they don't mind because she's attractive, and that's completely the wrong message to send out.
Yeah, you're making me think of Flash Gordon and Ming the Merciless's daughter. Flash is kind of like, oh, I really shouldn't do this because I love Dale, but oh my God, she's really turning me on right now. Okay, it's a very, very cheesy film, and I think the comic books are even cheesier, to be honest. But it's not right. Yeah, and that's very much a product of its time.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah, that's comic books and anime. I'm trying to think of more examples of the sort of the lecherous characters that you get in books.
I've got a really good one, but I don't actually want to spoil you on the Whitby Witch trilogy, but it would just be a teeny weeny little spoiler.
No, go on, go on.
It's the third book, The Whitby Child. And obviously, you know who Nelda is, I would presume by now. Nelda is one of the fish folk, the Elfwilders, and she is 70 odd years old, but in human terms, that means she's around about 13 or 14.
Right.
Now, there is one of the great elder Elfwelders, and they live for a really long time, and he's around 800 years old. And he's really taken a fancy to Nelda. Like,
Ooh.
big, big time. And he, through events that happen in the second book, he tricks Nelda into forcing to, he sort of forces her to promise to marry him, and she has to go through with it, and no one stands up for her. And there's a this horrendous bit in the third book where she's actually sort of delirious, and she's saying things in her delirium, and the rest of her tribe are kind of very shamefaced, looking away and not at each other, because she's saying, "Why won't anyone help me? He's watching me all the time," and things like this. It's really quite disturbing. But he is a very lechy, gross character. He's not out and out rapist. He couldn't be. Because, he's basically like a 90-something-year-old man
Yeah.
with a 13-year-old girl, which is really disturbing. But that's what's being addressed there.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh,
Very
God.
much so. Like I said, Robin Jarvis doesn't pull his punches. Really, really bad. But yeah, that's a very great, it's a great example of a very lecherous character, and it's not presented in any way as titillating or humorous. It's not funny. It's really not funny at all.
Yeah. I think another example of that is in the Poldark books, and I'm not sure how much he appears in the books as opposed to the TV series, but you have the Reverend. Have you watched the later series?
I still haven't finished the first series.
Oh, okay. Sorry. This is a spoiler, then.
Well, no, don't worry about it, because it, you know, it's period drama. I read the books years ago.
Well, the character of Morwella is sort of, and again, this is spoilers for anyone, the character of Morwella is forced to marry this really disgusting reverend who mistreats her horrifically. And because of, during the time, basically, rape within a marriage was not recognised as such.
No.
She was duty-bound to give him what he wanted when he wanted. So he would force himself on her a lot. And even while she was pregnant, to the point where she was very badly sick. And he kind of, after she gave birth, he wanted her to die. Because she wasn't reciprocating what he wanted. And, you know, he started to have feelings for her sister, who he started to then sleep with as well. He has a hole in his study in which he can look through into the bathroom to watch people bathing.
Nice.
And things like that. But again, this was not seen as humorous at all. It was painted exactly as it was, which was highly disturbing. Really disgusting and incredibly severe, and was also gross in the sense that no one was able to help her, and no one was really trying, to be honest. You have the Dr. Ennis, who is doing the best he can and sort of saying you need to stop having sex with her until she's better and stuff like that, and it's really disturbing, and I like that. Again, that sounds weird. Not as in that's what I'm for. But I like the way that they presented it. Because it felt very real.
Yeah.
And there was no doubt about it. There was no, you didn't see his side. They didn't try to make him sympathetic at any point. Like, no, he is clearly doing something wrong here. And hopefully he will be punished for it.
I mean, while we're on the subject, and this is going to come out of left field until you think about it properly, but if I say Jabba the Hutt...
Oh, God! But yes! But oh, God!
Yeah. And I thought... It's like, what is... I don't know where to start, almost. It's kind of like... They don't have to be the same species. Clearly not, because, I mean, I'm not even bipedal. But I'll dress up women in various scanty dancing costumes and, you know, chain them to my dais. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Admittedly, the whole Princess Leia wearing a gold bikini thing is slightly problematic in the sense of, now who was that really for at the time?
Yeah. Who was the one who was directing it? Because I really doubt that Jabba the Hutt.
But the idea of this basically huge space slug type thing, and it in no way is he ever presented as being at all anything other than just utterly disgusting.
Yeah, he is just a space slug.
And who doesn't like fist punch the air kind of thing every time she strangles him with his own chain?
Yeah.
That's like the highlight of the film for me. But yeah, you always don't need to really explain. It's just a really, really disgusting lecherer character.
Thank you for making me think of that. That's really gross.
You're welcome.
Oh, I feel sick now.
Okay. Well, we've got a few minutes. Let's round up by looking at some of the weird sex type stuff we've seen written about by authors. Because there's a meme I saw which says that once is just an occasion, twice is a coincidence, three times it's the author's kink kind of thing about fan fiction. And I'm like, that actually sounds really accurate. And I think that might actually be a thing, as in if there's one specific thing that strikes you as a bit odd and just keeps coming back in someone's writing, then there's a very good chance that that's a personal kink kind of thing.
Yeah, but see, that worries me, because I write quite a lot about sexual abuse and rape and stuff like that. I can assure you that that is not a kink of mine. I'm
more
not
meant in
into
the sort of,
sexual
if you're,
abuse.
If you're writing a consensual scene and there's a specific act that happens
right.
every time, not a case of
okay.
as a plot necessarily requires some sexual
right,
abuse.
Right, okay,
of some kind.
So a specific thing. Okay, so...
Well, it's like if you always had a goat in the corner or something, that would kind of be a kink, wouldn't it? I'm not saying I've ever read anything like that. I'm just saying, just off the top of my head.
Just tell me if you do. I just can't get it on unless there's a goat in the room. Okay, so what's the weirdest one you've done? Sorry, that's not what
I was going to say. Can we rephrase that?
Sorry, what's the weirdest one that you've read?
That I've read? The not quite rape scene by Emily G. And that's not going to make sense unless I explain it. But I swear, in every single one of her books I've read, you have the two main characters who, either with each other or with someone else, unwillingly have sex. And it happens, it's happened in definitely three books, The Thief with No Shadow, The Laurentine Spy, and The Sentinel Mage.
Right.
And it usually comes down to, the weirdest one was probably The Laurentine Spy, where the two main characters ended up sleeping together, even though one of them was kind of like, oh god, I'm, you know, it's a societal thing, I'm expected to, and she's expected to not enjoy it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they just didn't talk at all, the whole, you know, during the whole sort of 10 minutes that it would have taken. And it was just really weird. And then later on, he's sort of like, oh, no, I'll show you that it can be a good time kind of thing. It wasn't that pleasant for her. And I'm like, this is such a weird thing to put in a fantasy novel. It really is strange. And I wouldn't necessarily have thought anything of it, except that something very similar happened in The Thief with No Shadow. As in, with a couple of different characters. Everyone ends up with who they're supposed to in the end, but apparently you can't get there without having unsatisfactory or borderline rape sex somewhere else.
Right.
And then again, it happens in The Sentinel Mage. And I'm like, okay, that's three for three books in a row by this author that I've read that keeps happening. It's like, this is clearly something you need to get out of your system.
What are you doing?
So it's not, I suppose it's not like adventurous, but it's a bit sort of, okay, that's weird. If you want to go adventurous, probably... oh god, can I even say this? Can I even say it out loud? The Cushiel's Dart series by Jacqueline Carey. I've mentioned them before. The book I'm thinking of is the third one, Cushiel's Avatar, where she basically ends up in a torture harem.
Okay, right.
Yeah, now, Jacqueline Carey writes about anal sex quite a bit.
Okay.
And it's not done in a gross way. It clearly is part of the whole story because, you know, Phaedra Nodelani is actually a courtesan trained to do all of this stuff. But the torture harem takes it a step further, and they're trying to bring down basically an evil god and his main worshipper. Yeah, she takes the whole anal sex thing a little bit further with a strapped iron... I can't even think of the right word for it. It's almost like a codpiece.
Right, an iron strap-on.
But it goes over an actual penis, and it's got spikes.
Wait, what?
And
no.
that's it. Every time it's designed for the back passage. I say designed, it's obviously not designed. It's pretty gross.
That is... okay.
I don't want people to think I wouldn't recommend these books. I would, but I have to say, I read those bits with kind of like the hairs on the back of my neck raising because I was so freaked out.
Right. Okay.
So, really, a goat in the corner of the room would have actually been better from my perspective. That would have been less weird. How about you?
God, I'm trying to think now. I think probably, because I don't read actually that many books which have got sex scenes in them.
Yeah.
At least not recently. But I did read quite a bit of Philippa Gregory before, and she tended to have quite a lot of sex scenes in them. And of the ones that I read, there was usually magic mixed in, but to the point where it was magic which was kind of sort of enchanting the sort of the male character. So they were female they were women in positions of power who sort of, you know, were enchanting the male characters to get kind of what they wanted. And there was this thing where it was the males would become obsessed with them, despite the fact that obviously magic wasn't really allowed. It was kind of this devilish sort of secret. Have you ever read much Philippa Gregory?
Only the other Boleyn girl and a couple of the others in that particular series. I've not really picked up any of the others.
Yeah. But again, so it was these female characters who were, maybe not always with magic, but it was these characters who lured men in a lot of ways. Through charms, yeah. Through magic, through whatever. And that seems to be very present in a lot of her books. So I guess we could say that. She's into domineering women. Or men who can be easily
led around by the balls.
Yeah. Okay, well, here's a question. Do you have anything in any of the sex scenes that you write? And I know you've written some.
Don't out me.
It's fine, I'll admit that I've done it too. I've written quite a bit. But do you have any which... Do you appear to have a kink which appears in a lot of your sex scenes?
If I do, I don't think it appears regularly. I'm sure... Okay, let's be honest, everyone's got a kink. Pretty sure mine doesn't come out my right.
I don't necessarily mean a kink that you yourself, but something that just appears a lot in writing.
That's the thing, isn't it, with these ones where they keep turning up all the time. That's usually subconscious, and that's usually a case of, you know, that is the author's kink kind of thing.
The odd thing is, like, I know that one thing that has sort of appeared in at least a few of mine, and it's not always the same couple that I'm writing, is something that I myself am not actually, wouldn't really be up for.
Yeah.
But for some reason, when I'm writing it, I'm like, yeah, that's really good. But it's not something that I've ever thought, you know what I want? I want to be choked. Like, I've never once thought I want to be choked. And yet, it's actually happened in a few of the sex scenes I've written. There has been choking involved. So, yeah. I don't know whether that disproves your rule or whether I just have something really weird going on.
Who knows? In all fairness, the new sex scenes I've written, really, have either been... It's a case of... I'm just trying to think. Generally, they're young adult,
yeah.
So they don't get the same. You wouldn't perhaps be quite as experimental,
quite as graphic as some of the scenes that I've sent you have been in the past.
One of them particularly sticks in my mind, I have to say.
Which one was that?
I don't think you want me to talk about it on air.
No, that's probably a good idea. I think I do know the one.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah.
But it's either that or it's a case of if there's been another sex scene, sort of an adult one, it's a case of someone's been has accidentally sort of walked in on somebody else kind of thing.
Hmm.
So you've got that distance between the characters. I wouldn't have said, I don't think you could really draw parallels between them. On the other hand, I'm supposed to be sending you some more smut, aren't I? And I keep putting it off.
You are. You've
so you can tell. You can tell me if I'm betraying myself.
I wasn't helpful last time you were trying to write one of those scenes because I kept talking about bats. As far as I recall, it was a pairing that I did not approve of, so
yes,
I was trying to
yes,
ruin
you
it.
Did. You'll be happy to know that a bat does make an appearance.
Yes!
So, well done, power of the suggestions.
That'll be the next thing. There always has to be a bat in these sex scenes. What's that, Jules?
Because Madeline decrees it so. One final question, and this is just a random one, really, but there are a group of people who are... It's particularly with young adult fiction, and most specifically with Sarah Jane Mass's A Court of Thorns and Roses series, wanting them reclassified as erotica.
Right.
Rather than new adult, because they don't feel new adult covers it enough, and they feel that the material is obscene and teenagers should not be reading it.
But I don't feel like new adult means teenagers. YA is teenagers. New adult is more for people at university.
Yeah.
So 19, I disagree.
19 to 26 year old kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I would disagree with that too. But I think I just find it interesting that people can be so sort of knee-jerk about any kind of reference to sex whatsoever in, say, teen children or even new adult books. That
to be honest, it's pretty tame.
It's really explicit,
but it is pretty tame.
You'd have to have a working knowledge of how everything fit together to really work out what was going on, because she's quite coy in her descriptions.
Yeah, she doesn't actually use any of the particular words.
No, exactly. So saying it needs to be erotica, I'm thinking, have you actually ever read any erotica? I don't think you have.
We have some surprises for you.
There's a whole new world out there for you to like complain about, honestly. You need to broaden your reading. So yeah, that's always struck me as a bit weird, really. And I've certainly seen more graphic stuff. I've seen more graphic sex scenes in actual teen fiction.
Yeah.
It's aimed for much younger teens. So I do think that's a bit weird. So it's almost kind of like a reverse lettery thing where it's a case of, oh no, you must cover up.
Yeah. Yeah, prudishness. I think it's also underestimates our ability. I mean, what? I'm sorry. Boys are watching porn from 12, if not younger. So are most girls.
They're having to actually take teenagers aside in school and say, you know what, sex doesn't look like what you find on the internet.
Yeah.
Now.
And maybe actually if... okay, so Sarah J. Maas seems to have a real thing about humongous wingspans. and that gets a bit excessive. And obviously the sex in particularly A Court of Thorns and Roses is just mind-bogglingly good. But it does actually begin with the fact that she's the character Feyre is having sex with another boy.
Yeah.
And it's just described as the way sex kind of really is, to be honest. Which is that sex isn't always mind-boggling. Sometimes it's just sex.
Well, sometimes it's mind-boggling for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I didn't know you had tentacles. I'd never have signed up for this.
I have to admit, I've never had that problem, but I support you, Jules. So I actually feel like, despite the fact that it is a little incredible sometimes, it's actually quite realistic.
There's the whole sort of Throne of Glass series where, you know, one of them keeps bursting into flames during, which I think is like quite dangerous personally.
Yeah, that is very dangerous.
But it's fantasy. It's a fantasy sex type thing. But the presentation that it's okay and that it's perfectly healthy and normal to have physical desires for people, I think, is a reasonably healthy way to go about it, whether you like her writing or not. And I think it's as damaging in a way to say that all good characters must like refrain, or it must happen off screen, or they must all be married or whatever, as it is to have lechery.
It also, but the thing is that books actually add another element to it, which that you don't get in porn, which is the emotional element. And that's why actually fanfiction can be a little bit different, because fanfiction often has the emotional side of it as well. And it's something that I think women in particular, girls in particular, really like. And so when you get a sex scene in a book, it's not just the sex. You don't just see the sex. You're coming into the sex scene with the history behind these two characters. You're coming into it with the emotional complexities. And then there's the aftermath of it. And you see that. And I think that it's more realistic. Sex doesn't work like it does on TV. It doesn't go on for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. At least not without a break and a snack, maybe. You know, a toilet break. Like, come on. And this is the other thing. The reality of what happens after you've had sex. You need to leave the room. You need to wash. Like, you don't just lie there in each other's arms and go, that was good. All right, good night. Like, no. And I just feel like if you want to sort of take a look at the reality of what sex is like, having it in books which involve a story is a lot healthier than just saying, no, remove all of that. At which point the only glimpses of sex that a lot of these young teenagers and a lot of these young kids are getting is through porn, which is not accurate.
No. It's certainly not. I have to admit, I've read fan fiction that's actually kind of scarred me a little bit.
We've all read fan fiction that scarred us a little bit. I'm not saying that all fan fiction has the emotional side of it. Some fan fiction is literally just porn. And yeah. Some of it is very, very peculiar and raises a lot of questions. But the point is that I think actually a majority of it does have that emotional side.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you've read more than I have, but yes, I would say that's true.
Sorry. To be fair, you've clearly read a lot more porn than me, because you're a lecherous human being, is what it sounded like you were just subtly saying that.
I meant fan fiction. I mean, you might have read more porn than me, I don't know.
You've lived 13 years longer than me.
I could be a late bloomer. You don't know that.
Right, well, I think we've run out of time.
I think we've run out of respect.
Yes, so as hopefully we haven't scarred you, dear audience. if we haven't, send us your thoughts. How do you feel about sort of lechery being used as a form of humour? Do you have any sort of lecherous characters that you like, that you don't like? Do you agree with us on about comics or not, and about the prudishness and whether we should have sex appearing in young adult and new adult books? And providing that you can still bear to listen to us after all of that probably too much information, we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.